Could sleep medications be increasing the chances of people getting dementia? This is American research. If they are white, seemed to be the answer. The research on African-American people was more opaque. But is the medication the culprit? A University of California study concluded that older people who frequently took sleeping pills were 79% more likely to develop dementia than those who never used them. In the study, 3,000 older adults without dementia who lived outside nursing homes were enrolled in a study and followed for 9 years. Their average age was 74. This is the sort of result that obviously needs elucidation and examination of whatever devil is in the detail. Dr. Rosemary Gibson is a senior lecturer in the School of Psychology at Massey University. Rosie's specialty is sleep. Kia ora.
Kia ora. How are you?
Very well. I actually talked to the UCLA lead researcher and on this, and she was reluctant to ascribe a causal link between sleeping pills, benzodiazepines, for example, and dementia. And we were even told that some studies show a cognitively beneficial effect from some pills. So what are we to make of this, Rosie, that it's not being able to sleep rather than what you take to try and get to sleep?
Yeah, I think sleeping pills, you know, certainly are amongst many, many other factors that have been associated with increased likelihood of getting dementia. But, you know, we also know that things like hypertension and obesity, use of alcohol, mood disorders, you know, a whole raft of factors that are associated with increased likelihood of getting dementia. And when sleep goes wrong, it also does impact our cognitive functioning, unfortunately. So what we see is an interesting relationship with dementia in that disordered sleep can be quite an early symptom. When people are taking a sleeping pill, it may well just, like you say, be an indicator that something is going on with people's sleep in the first place, not necessarily that it's a sleeping pill.
Yes. And yet, and yet it's suggested the concerning thing about sleeping medications is that they block a chemical in the brain called acetylcholine. And when this brain chemical is blocked, risk for dementia increases significantly. Mm. And I'm quoting from a study, I think, that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So there is there is something tied up perhaps with sleeping pills as well.
Yeah, we don't. I think the jury's still out, and we know that when people do use sleeping pills, the kind of the quality of sleep isn't as good as when we're sleeping without them. It's not having the rejuvenating effects that true sleep would be having, in that we're getting all of that rich slow wave sleep and the quality of REM and so on. It is different when we're using sleeping pills, and we see, you know, that clinicians do recommend not using sleeping pills for long periods of time because of this, but also because of their addictive nature and so on. You know, the study that you've mentioned, those people who have an increased risk of dementia from using sleeping pills are those who are using them very frequently rather than the occasional users of sleeping pills.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're taking sleeping pills to get you through a certain period in life, you know, that's going to be a lot less risky if that risk is established rather than if you have sleeping pills all the time.
It's one of those things where, you know, thinking about what the underlying causes, and I think, you know, there is certainly is a time and a place for using these kind of sedative medications, you know, times of grief or stress, you know, with COVID situation and the floods and things like this, you know, people might find that they're less able to sleep, and we know that there's very much an external factor related to that. And so those kind of periods, people, you know, will use sleeping pills for a short period of time. It's when we find that over a few weeks, if we're still unable to go back to being able to sleep naturally, and if we're forming a dependency, then it may be that we need to address what the underlying issue with sleep is, and whether that's related to a secondary mood disorder or a primary sleep disorder or a breathing related sleep disorder or periodic limb movements. These are things that can be treated, you know, assessed and treated using non-pharmacological methods, which is certainly the preferable approach.
Yeah, and my last question will be to do with that, actually. Dr. Rosemary Gibson is with us. And we're not trying to scare people in this chat, but, I mean, other drugs used for other conditions also have a blocking effect, I was reading, with this chemical acetylcholine. So it's not just sleeping pills that are of concern if you have to take drugs for other conditions as well. It might pay to talk to your GP about these issues.
I think so. And we know, you know, again, there's lots of studies sort of showing things like not just what type of medication we're using, but the number of medications we're using and the time of day that we're taking them and how this can affect our sleep as well as our cognitive functioning. So things, again, like, you know, increasing risk for other health issues come up. But again, as you say, it's not necessarily if you're taking these that you're going to be more likely to get dementia. We know that about sort of 14% of the population who are sort of aged over 80 or so do have a dementia, but certainly there's plenty of people out there who are taking these kind of medications who don't have a dementia as well. So again, it's always the science is out there showing this, it's an increased risk. It might be something we can modify, but certainly there's a time and a place for these medications. So it's always about consulting and weighing up with your medical professionals.
Isn't it the case that both oversleeping and not sleeping enough could, or not, I assume, indicate incipient dementia? Why would both oversleeping and undersleeping be involved?
So what we tend to see is people having more fragmented sleep and more likely to sleep in the daytime, as well as to be more likely to have sleep disturbances at night. So it's a tricky one, and it's less straightforward as just a one-off sleep duration. We tend to see sleep becomes more fragmented across the day. Not achieving a decent length of sleep we know is being associated with poorer health outcomes. But again, there's always some people who across a lifespan make do on a lot less sleep than others, so it can be very tricky to kind of put people into those categories.
So your advice would be, and I'm sure it's great advice on the basis of what you know, for people who can't sleep to investigate other remedial areas and causes, as you say, before frequently taking sleep medication. I suppose in a busy world for GPs, that may understandably not always happen.
Yeah, and that's the situation that New Zealand's in, as well as many, many other countries. We don't have such, you know, expertise in sleep in primary healthcare. We're getting better at it, certainly, but it is a case of, looking out for those symptoms of a primary sleep disorder, particularly things like obstructive sleep apnea, when people are having pauses in their breathing and heavy snoring, because this can, again, affect not only disturbed sleep but our oxygen saturation, which can also affect cognitive functioning. We know there's quite a clear link there, as well as those other sleep insomnia related sleep disorders, which we know are related to kind of waking stresses and so on, that which can be well treated using things like cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia. But you're right, it's getting that treatment pathway kind of activated with the doctor and pursuing that and, reaching out to local sleep clinics and getting advice. Yeah.
Okay. And good to have your expertise on this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Dr. Rosie Gibson.